It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hey, it's the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. How are you? This is my show, and joining me today is Miss Chelsea Spawn. Chelsea, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
This is a quick segue to get us out of a conversation we were sick of. Today we are looking at WWE Evolution here on the Truepenny Show. This is the first ever WWE show we've looked at from top to bottom. We've managed to avoid it for 4 years, but we had to look at this one because it's about women's wrestling. And as you know, we're kind of big on women's wrestling at this particular show. Now, there was a lot, obviously, of run-up to this, and there's a big conversation and a wider philosophical discussion about WWE Evolution. And there was lots of celebration of women's wrestling, specifically from companies like Shimmer, who did a big catalogue of the things they were very proud about, because obviously Shimmer had a big influence on this. There was lots of people talking about wrestling history. So let's go with the big question first of all. WWE Evolution, what did it mean to you that this card was actually taking place?
Ooh, to me. Well, so first of all, I was there. Which the second they announced they were doing this and I saw that it was in New York, I was like, I don't even know where that is, but we're going. It meant enough to me that months ahead of time, I knew that if I had to choose between going to WrestleMania, which is going to be in the New York, New Jersey area this coming April, or going to this show, I was going to spend the money to get good tickets for this show. Because I wouldn't have started watching wrestling to begin with, or WWE to begin with at all, if there weren't really amazing women's wrestlers to watch. That was the whole attraction for me to begin with. That was why I cared in the first place. And the women have deserved something like this for a really long time. And I was really excited before, in the run-up to this, I was really excited about this before we even knew what was going to be on the card. Just the fact that they were doing an all-women show, such a nice feeling of like, oh, the women are finally going to get a shot. Because somebody did the math, and I think WWE has done 110, or I guess it's 111 now that Crown Jewel has happened. 111 different pay-per-view events that have just had men on them.
Mm.
No women whatsoever. So for the ladies to get one, I was pretty happy about. Hopefully it's not the last time. Hopefully they'll do more of them.
Would be nice if they did one annually, to be honest. That would make.
I think they should. I absolutely think they should.
Yeah, just do one annually. You know, we apparently you can have two all-men shows a year, so at least you could have always one all-women show a year.
I mean, why not? You know, and I think, I feel like the, I mean, granted, I don't know the exact, like, specific data about, like, how much money the show made or what the markup on the tickets is or whatever, but I feel like the crowd response and the fact that it was sold out and the reception that it got proves that there's an audience out there that wants this. Yeah. And I think if they did another one and did it at an even bigger venue, it would likely be just as successful, if not even more successful.
There was definitely a sellout crowd, you know. I mean, not just with Cole saying it, because you could see there weren't any gaps in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, when I bought tickets for this, when you go on Ticketmaster right after an event like this goes on sale, a lot of times you can't pick which section you want to buy tickets from. You have to search best available over and over and over again with the pre-sale codes. Mm. So I did that, and I bought a pair of nosebleed seats at first because that was the best thing I could find right away. And I had to search again for another 20 minutes to get the good seats that my friend and I got, where we were in the lower bowl, really close to the floor. We weren't on the floor, but we were like three rows up above the floor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The nosebleed seats that I bought, I put them up for resale and they sold like that. I mean, I put a little tiny markup on them, but just barely.
Yeah.
They sold really, really quickly because people wanted to go, even if it was a nosebleed seat. People wanted to be there. They wanted to see it in person.
It definitely seems like, you know, obviously, I mean, I have been accused before of being a women's wrestling journalist that wants women's wrestling to succeed. Well, duh.
Why would I say about a person?
Yeah, why would I not want my field of work to be successful? But, I have been accused of this before, of wishing things so. And it's like, yeah, but that's how the wrestling business works. You wish it so. you know, and you see it in wrestling all the time. New Japan did not get big by, like, just turning up. You know, they've worked very, very hard in a very concentrated way with very subtle use of storylines to create a more appealing show for a wider audience. You know, yeah. And that's what WWE has done.
And they put on a bunch of
wrestling.
Dream matches.
Yeah. And that's what WWE have done of women's wrestling. You know, it's been very sensibly created and very sensibly at the right pace developed to get to this point.
I don't necessarily know that I would agree with sensibly.
All right, not sensibly. They've thrown enough stuff at the wall
developed.
To see what stuck. But at least
it's
they're
developed.
Yeah, at least they're throwing stuff at the wall now rather than leaving it in the bucket on the floor.
They're throwing some stuff at the wall. They did a spectacularly terrible job in their product leading up to this, promoting this event.
Yes.
And a lot of us were really worried about that. They very clearly did not take this as seriously as they should have. I knew in my heart, I was like, if you give those girls a shot, it doesn't even matter who you put on that card. If you give any of those women in any WWE locker room a shot, they're all going to take it and kick it down and do something great with it. Yeah. I knew that. But it was very frustrating for months going like, guys, the pay-per-view is in a month and a half and you've only announced two matches. And one of the participants in one of those matches is injured.
Yeah.
Like, get it together. You know, it just, I don't know. There was a lot of things they did wrong with this, but I was very happy they were doing it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a few. I was well documented. I'm not a WWE watcher, but I didn't feel out of place with this. There was a couple of points where I was taken out at the moment, but we'll talk about them when we get to them.
Okay.
But the actual show was a lot better than I hoped it would be. Cole's voice still annoys the piss out of me, but I put up with it because at least Beth Phoenix and
Renee
Young, there you go. They go right. Beth Phoenix and Renee Young are good commentators, and I could feel that better. It was nice to hear female voices for a start, calling matches.
Yeah.
It was nice to see something a bit different from a production in WWE. It wasn't as, well, as we found out this week from our crew on the pre-production chat, it wasn't directed by Kevin Dunn, which obviously that makes me a lot happier. Because that's one of the reasons why I don't watch WWE anymore, because I'm sick of that cookie cutter production and it just does my head in, you know. So it's one of those reasons. In fact, we'll talk about one match. Well, should we start at the beginning? Let's start get to the matches, because we've been talking for 10 minutes. We haven't talked about any matches yet, so we should probably get on with that. Okay,
sure.
So the first match was a dark match. It was Rhea Ripley versus Dakota Kai for the WWE NXT UK Women's Championship. Rhea Ripley, I've not seen this match because it was a dark match. Dakota Kai and Rhea Ripley have been tearing trees up in NXT, and it was nice to see both of them get on the card, even if I didn't get to see the match.
Oh my God, I was so proud of Dakota for getting on this card. Like, I mean, Rhea's a big deal right now. And I mean, obviously she's NXT Women's, or NXT UK Women's Champion. And she had a great showing in the Mae Young Classic. But I feel like Dakota is someone that NXT fans know about and fans of independent wrestling know about. But I feel like a lot of the people who mostly watch the, you know, main roster product, are not as aware of her. So the fact that they put her on this card, even if it was a dark match, I felt like was a real vote of confidence in her, and she totally deserves it. And it wasn't a mind-blowing, you know, showcase. It wasn't meant to be. It was meant to be like, hey, this is an opener. But it was really fun. And I got really emotional when Dakota came out. And it was also really nice because we were all, like, the crowd was already, people weren't even all in their seats yet, but the crowd was already very loud for this because we were excited. And so that was nice. And you could tell that Rhea and Dakota knew that too. Like, they knew where they were. They knew the significance of what they were doing. And it was a nice little match. I had fun watching it.
The only trouble I have with this is, and this is a kind of a thing that's a theme in wrestling that I kind of want to stop. I want to see things stop like this. Here is an Australian defending a title against a New Zealander in America that's the British Championship. Do you see
that's a little funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, stuff like that. It, like, drives me nuts. It's
so,
like,
all the accents we get mixed up in one place, is that
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, I can see why you've given Rhea Ripley the break in NXT UK, because obviously NXT is fairly crowded with women and you want her to stand out. She's a big badass monster wrestler, and that's cool.
Yep.
It's the right thing to do. But it is just like left this anomaly of the fact you've got an Australian who spent no time in the UK on her indie days because she didn't really have an indie career as the champion. So she doesn't have the connection with the crowd. I mean, she does. I suppose she doesn't have the negative correction with the crowd that they're trying to like go for with someone, you know, in that direction. But it just it just annoys me. It's just like, it's a bit like when Kenny Omega was US champ. He's not American, and he isn't defending the belt in America.
I was gonna say, and he doesn't live here. That was my biggest criticism of it, because I was like, you don't live here. I'm gonna see you once a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. I don't know.
Just annoying. I understand. It's just one of the vagaries. You want all the title belts defended at all times. But it was like when we had a European championship in the WWE, which is inevitably never held by a European. Because they only had Davey Boy Smith. So, you know, it was essentially a belt for him. You know,
yeah.
That's the reason why they did that.
I sort of wonder if maybe the reason, and I haven't watched the NXT UK show so far. I hear it's good, but I don't have time to watch that much wrestling. I wonder if Rhea is meant to be like the big bad monster heel so that they can push somebody who actually lives in the UK as a big baby face for taking her out. That's my rationale for why I think they might be doing it. But I agree with you. It's a little strange.
Yeah. I'm guessing they'll probably either pick Charlie Morgan for that role or...
Oh, she's great. I love her.
Yeah, somebody like that. Anywho, let's just move on to the next match. Now, we talked earlier about the fact that I've not watched WWE in a long time. And Lita and Trish Stratus defeating Alicia Fox and Mickie James was a perfect example of that, because I stopped watching the WWE just as Lita and Trish became big stars as singles wrestlers. So actually, maybe the first time I'd watched them ever tag together, if they tagged together in the past, it's probably, I've never really seen them wrestle that much.
I don't think they've ever tagged together in the past like this. I wish we had Sierra on the show with us so she could tell us what we were wrong about.
Yeah. So for me, it's just like, honestly, I've never watched these two wrestle before, or much, anyway. In fact, I don't think I'd ever watched them have singles matches before, because I stopped watching WWE that long ago, that it's just like, this is a completely new experience. And for people who have been out the ring for that long, perfectly good experience as well. Alicia Fox and Mickie James, obviously, big fan of Mickie James from her Impact days, because again, I never saw her original WWE run, but I did watch her Impact run, and I loved the work she did there. Such a good utility player. You know, can work heel, can work face, is such a good character worker. And this was perfectly acceptable for what it was. It was never going to tear trees up because, you know, when you've been out the ring for 8 years, it was nice to see Dave Finley tweeting about Trish Stratus and Lita because they were his girls. He was head producer of the women's division in the early 2000s when the women's division in WWE actually started to gain some traction, because he had this job of essentially getting people like Trish Stratus and Lita, who weren't specific, well, Lita was, but Trish Stratus wasn't a trained wrestler, and turning them into decent wrestlers. You know, he was the one who'd worked with them an awful lot. And watching Trish Stratus, you could really see the Dave Finley influence in what she was doing. It was really interesting to see what she was pulling off, going back to her old moveset. Because, you know, Dave Finley's awesome. Yes, and... yeah, it was interesting, definitely interesting to watch. I enjoyed this matchup greatly, and it wasn't ever going to be fantastic because it wasn't supposed to be. Jim Ross actually suggested this should go on first because he was saying star power, it will get people interested, and I think he was right in this case.
I got to say, in person, I thought it was pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the crowd was so loud for this. Like, we were screaming. I think I could be wrong about this, because I've watched Trish and Lita's singles runs very selectively. But my understanding is that for most of their careers before, where they established themselves, they were rivals, so they weren't really allowed to be a unit like this. Mm-hmm. They call themselves Team Bestie because like they're BFFs in real life, and I love that. I got really emotional when, very early in the match, Trish is in there with Alicia Fox, and she points at Mickie James and, like, you know, just gestures like, I want her. And Alicia makes this great pouty face. Like, she's frustrated, but she's not going to deny the legend that is Trish Stratus. And she tags Mickie in so that Mickie can get into it. and the pop that they got together. Oh my God. It was so cool. Mickie James could wrestle a paper bag and make it look like a great match. I mean, she is just fantastic, but I thought that her and Trish working together looked so good. And I want to give Trish credit for that too, considering I feel like Trish looked even better in this match than she did in the Women's Rumble back in January, which was her first match in a really long time. And I mean, she and Mickie going to work together, you know, it was like, it was that thing you get a lot of times in WWE. You only see that kind of dynamic when you get two male wrestlers who are, you know, very established in a prior era coming back. Like, you see that all the time where it's two old friends going to work. And Trish and Mickie getting to do that was just so rewarding. And people on Twitter were saying, we're like, you know, can they give us another WrestleMania match now? Because they look better now than they did then. also, I want to say, Lita's moonsault, everybody screamed. It was awesome. It looked so good. She had posted a little bit on Instagram practicing it before this to make sure she was ready, which I was glad she had a Lita salt in her. Props to her for being willing to do that. And also, I wanted to say, I'm so happy Alicia Fox ended up in this match instead of Alexa Bliss. Of course, I would never wish for anybody to be injured, even somebody who I'm not the biggest fan of personally, like Alexa Bliss. But I do not care about the whole thing that Vince and WWE likes, which is let's get two hot blondes from different eras and get them to fight when there's like really no comparison between them. Like, they're very different wrestlers. They have very different styles. That's not necessarily bad, but I didn't see the connection otherwise between the two of them. Like, I didn't see the overlap. I think Alexa probably would have done fine in this match. I mean, she's not a bad wrestler, but Alicia was honored to be there in a way that I just don't know if Alexa necessarily would have been, because she doesn't. I mean, Alicia's the longest tenured woman in the company currently. She's been there for like, I think like 8 or 9 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. She's been there a long time. For much of her career, she's been a background player who's been used to make other people look good, you know? And she's only been women's champion one time. She was Divas champion, which is wonderful. I would never take that away from her. There's been so often where I've watched her and I've gone, she's the most interesting thing in that segment, where she makes everything she's a part of more enjoyable. You know, like when she was captain for Survivor Series, I don't know if you watched any of this, James, but they made her team captain for Team Raw for Survivor Series for the first women's Survivor Series match. And she took it to heart. She started wearing cute, crazy hats, calling herself captain, like ordering the other girls around. And she just makes everything she's a part of more enjoyable. And she sold her ass off in this match. She knew that was her job, was the legends are coming, put them over, oversell for them, make them look spectacular. And she did it. And she was just so much fun to watch. I just got such a little thrill out of so many of the things that she did, even though her wrestling wasn't like the point of it.
No,
I really wanted to give her credit for that, because I feel like she's someone that's underappreciated, and she worked so hard in this match. And then there was a backstage interview I saw from WWE.com where she said that this match was the most important moment in her career. I'm getting emotional talking about it. I was just really happy for her and really proud of her. And I loved this match. I thought it was a great way to open the show. And I would like Team Bestie to come back anytime. Anytime they want to come back, I would be excited about it. I
think there's an old phrase back in the territory days called a carpenter, and that's what Alicia Fox is. The person who is a carpenter is a person that builds your house, as in draws money. And you need as many carpenters as you can find, because they're the people that make your stars look good. And they don't have to be... I think that's something we talked about this long before. It was kind of a theme we had a couple of years ago, where people were like the Triple H thing about, if you don't want to be WWE heavyweight champion, what are you doing in this business? And it's like, there are plenty of guys and girls from all over the world who've made a perfectly serviceable living in professional wrestling because they were just good at what they did. And there is nothing wrong with that. And there isn't, it's the entitlement thing of like, I want my guy to be champion, you know, because everyone wants their guy to be champion. Of course you do, but it's not the way it works. I mean, you look back at Bob Holly is a good example, you know, Hardcore Holly. He was a guy who made his living in the WWE for 15 years. And when he felt he needed to retire, he said, Vince, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. My body hurts too much. And Vince was like, thank you very much for your time. You know, and he was a guy who worked incredibly hard. He was Intercontinental Champion a couple of times, but he just turned up, did his job, went home.
Yeah.
He was never interested in being a superstar. Wasn't out partying late at night. He just came to do the job he was supposed to do, and he got people over. And there are, you need those people. You can't have not have them, you know. And it doesn't mean I would rather have him into the Hall of Fame than several people who were there already, just because the WWE wouldn't exist without him. I can show you people he got over very specifically in a very specific way that needed to be done, and he was the guy to do the job.
I mean, and Mickey James gets used that way now that she's back, as, you know, you need somebody to have a real good, nice little match on Raw for like 7 minutes, and you need the person that they're wrestling to show them the way. You put them in with Mickey James and she'll do the job. And Alicia Fox does it too. I mean, that's the reason she was the person the women had their final match with on Tough Enough when they did the most recent season of Tough Enough. You know, they need those people who don't need to be at the top all the time, who are comfortable being in the position of, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to do it the best that I possibly can, and I'm going to collect my paycheck and I'm going to go home.
Yeah, that's it, really. Okay, we'll move on to the 20-woman Battle Royal, which featured Nia Jax, Alundra Blaze, Asuka, Billie Kay, Carmella, Diana Brooke, Ember Moon, Ivory, Kelly Kelly, Lana, Mandy Rose, Maria Kanellis, Michelle McCool, Molly Holly, Naomi, Peyton Rice, Sonya Deville, Tamina, Tori Wilson, and Zelina Vega. It lasted 60 minutes and 28 seconds and was won by Nia Jax.
Did you practice that?
No. I just read it off the Cage Match page. That's what it said, so I said it.
good job.
Thank you. It was a thoroughly entertaining Battle Royal. It's the kind of thing I always expect from a WWE Battle Royal. It very heavily produced. You could clearly see where there were certain spots supposed to go on. It kind of, I do think it's one of the reasons why I kind of got burnt out on Battle Royals. I kind of like watching the All Japan Battle Royals, because you clearly, they've never talked about a thing. And the thing is with All Japan Battle Royals, pinfalls count. So essentially everyone gangs up on one guy until there's two guys left. So I kind of like that approach, and this is kind of like the opposite approach to that. This is very clinically, they clearly spent hours planning this, and it was scripted to the nth degree, which I'm never a big fan of, but this was perfectly entertaining for what it was trying to do, and it gave loads of people the opportunity to be on the show. Maria Kanellis, how good does she look for like being a mom of 5 months?
Oh my god, she looks great.
Yeah.
And I love that her daughter was there to see her. I mean, her daughter's not even going to remember that, probably.
No.
But I thought that was really nice for her, that her husband and her daughter were right there ringside to celebrate with her.
And last time I saw her wrestle was in the main events against Gail Kim at Bound for Glory a couple of years ago. In a match that should have been the actual main event, it was the semi-final. And all the way through, and it killed. It was EC3 and the Bobby Lashley in a cage in the main event, and the crowd were completely flat because Maria Kanellis and Gail Kim had taken the wind out of their sails, which was brilliant. But anyway, it was the year Gail.
I think I've seen that match actually.
Good. Yeah, it was the year Gail Kim went into the Hall of Fame, and it wasn't a classic wrestling match, nor was it supposed to be, because Maria Kanellis isn't that good. But by God, could she get heat in an empty room? And it was like, they were just cheering so loud for Gail. It was like, oh, EC3 and Bobby Lashley. Wow. Fair enough then.
It's hard to compete with Gail Kim.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But yeah, this was really, really good. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't my kind of thing, but certainly full of entertainment. It was full of cool spots and there was interesting people in this. It was nice seeing, Alundra Blaze back.
Yes.
And it was nice seeing Molly Holly back. Do you know what Molly Holly does now?
I don't know what she does now. What does she do now?
You know Ken Anderson and DeVere's wrestling school up in Minnesota?
I mean, I know it exists.
Yeah.
Does she teach there?
She volunteers there.
Wow.
She refuses to get paid.
Oh my God.
She works as a real estate agent during the week. She does Friday night classes and Thursday night classes to make sure she's free to be at church on Sunday.
How do you not love Molly Holly? Yeah. I was so disappointed when she got eliminated really quickly, because I really wanted to see her mix it up with some of the girls. You know, Oh, I just love her. No one ever has a story about her where you're like, oh, that's disappointing. I wish I didn't know that about a wrestler that I previously liked. Like, she's just such a sweet, wonderful person. Yep. That's the vibe that I get from everybody.
Yeah.
Including Beth Phoenix, who, you know, just sings her praises continuously. Yeah. I was really happy they asked her to be a part of this.
Ivory as well. It was nice to see her.
Oh my God, she looked great. Can we talk about Ivory at 56
yeah.
getting down next to Carmella, who is like half her age and was a fitness model? Like, that takes some guts. There are a lot of women who probably wouldn't have felt comfortable doing that. And oh my God, Ivory's a pistol, man. I love her. I was really hopeful. It was kind of crossed my fingers a little bit when she and Bailey were talking on Twitter about wanting a match with each other, because I want to see that someday. That would be fun. She looked great. Yeah. I was so happy to see her. Like, she had such good energy, and her post-match interview, if you haven't watched it, that they did backstage, is great. She's just like, I survived! And she talks about being intimidated by Nia and Asuka, and it's cute. I really like her.
She's really cool.
I went into this match. So I don't know if you followed this, James, but like the way that WWE announced this was after spending 6 months building tag teams of the women, like pairing them off.
Mm-hmm.
They announced a couple Raws before this. They were like, oh yeah, there's going to be a big battle royale for the women's championship. And all the women who were in that match found out when that happened on Raw.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. You saw those reaction posts. Oh my God, that was so funny. And I get why they did it, because looking at this card, by the time we got to the end of this card, I mean, like I said, this is a great crowd and audience that wanted to like this, but by the time we got to the end of this card, we were all so tired.
Yeah.
Like, we were so tired. It would have been hard if the show had been longer than it was. Something wouldn't have worked if the show had been longer than it was. But that said, I was still disappointed, because we're all hoping that they're going to give the women tag team championships, and we want more belts for the women and more stories for the women. So I was worried going into this match that it was just going to be a Divas match from WrestleMania. And that's not a comment on the quality of the wrestling or anything like that. I'm saying a Divas match in the terms of the way WWE used to book those matches, where you'd have all these great performers, you'd get to see them do one thing a piece, and then, you know, you'd get one person who would randomly win in the middle of it all, and that would just be it. I was really pleasantly surprised. There were some great moments in this. I thought there were some nice things that the women did to keep their characters established. You know, like, I loved Asuka and Naomi working together. I just I love them. I stand for them so hard. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that. And Nia and Tamina doing their little, first of all, Nia and Tamina getting into it. I was not excited about that match before this. And then I was like, oh no, I want to see that. Let's do that right now. I love the idea of two big girls wrestling each other. And yeah, I don't even care that, like, people talk all the time about, like, Tamina's not very good. I'm like, I don't care. I want to see her pick Nia up over her shoulders. Like, that would be fun for me. And I liked their little tribute to Roman that they did. I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
There were a lot of good moments in this match, and I enjoyed it. And it was nice to see all the girls and to see them look like they were having a good time. I'm wondering if there's going to be some repercussions for Mandy that she eliminated Sonya. I was surprised they did that. I'm wondering if they want to split them up so they can try to push Mandy as a single star. I hope they don't do that too soon.
No, I mean, I mean, for me, like, the big thing for me was, like, seeing the older faces. Interesting. We just talked about Ivory. Did you know she was Steve Austin's favorite wrestler when he was growing up?
I didn't. Wow. Yeah, when he was growing up.
Yeah,
wow.
He used to watch Glow, and Ivory was like, what was it, Tia Carrera? I believe that was the name. Yeah, because she was on Glow, and then he loved her.
I thought it was pretty cool that there was someone from Glow on this show to begin with. That felt very appropriate. Yeah. I really liked that.
And there was a story that she said on the Steve Austin podcast. I'm gonna retell it now, because I thought it was really, really cool. when she made her debut with WWE, she was doing kind of like acting style gigs. It was kind of doing spots with people. And she was getting changed in the locker room, in the wrestlers' locker room. And some of the female wrestlers were complaining about it. And Pat Patterson turned around and went, no, she stays here because she's a worker.
Mm.
And that was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So
she's a badass. She totally, yeah. Having her on the show was really nice. Speaking of legends, I wish we'd gotten to see Alundra do a little bit more.
Yes.
I don't like her political beliefs, but arguably a lot, this is one of those things where I was like, none of this would have happened without her.
Definitely not, no.
She totally deserved to be on the show, and I wanted to see a little bit more from her. I was excited when she got into it with Tamina, because that's a matchup in terms of styles that she does very well with, that Alundra does very well with. Definitely. So maybe we'll see a little bit of that in the future. That would be nice.
That was cool. Right, should we move on to the next one?
Yes.
The next one was the Mae Young Classic Final featuring Toni Storm, who defeated Io Shirai in 10 minutes and 4 seconds. This was a really, really good match. I'm going to have a problem with it only because I know they can do better. But there's reasons why they couldn't do better in this situation. Basically, two reasons. One, it was a massive crowd, bigger than either of them had wrestled in front of before. And two, there was still a shitload of stuff to go on this card. And if they stole the show, it would not have done their political careers any good whatsoever. So I have no problem with them being not as good as they could be. I still think it was a good match. It was nice to see a break change of going to some straight on mat wrestling for a while after seeing the craziness of it was a good change of pace.
Yes.
And they're both excellent mat wrestlers. Toni Storm and Io Shirai are probably the two best wrestlers on this card for me. And yeah, they can't have a bad match. It just could have been done to have been about 25 minutes longer and in Currican Hall. that's just me, because I've seen the wrestling Currican Hall and I know how good they can be, and that's the reason why I wasn't disappointed, because I know what they have to do. This is their job now. This is not what they used to do.
Right.
And it's also the big difference between them wrestling for Stardom and them wrestling here is there's a producer now. Whereas they would have got their instructions from Rossi and they would press go. Whereas now there's a producer that's taking direction from a writer who has a long-term plan of what's going to happen over the next 2 years, we hope.
Mm.
So, you know, this is a different environment, and this is one of the reasons why I have a disconnect with WWE Wrestling. It's not as direct as a product as other wrestling that I see, because the companies are smaller, so there is less of a barrier for creativity with people in the ring. Obviously, it is more dangerous because they used to do things that were just plain flat out crazy, which they could have done with Calming Down. But also, like, that they know, they're more aware of the story they're trying to tell. And here, this was not bad. I'm not saying it's bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm trying to explain why I disconnect with the WWE product compared to with other products, if that makes sense.
No, that's fair. That's very fair. I wish I liked Toni Storm.
Yeah.
I don't connect to her wrestling. I don't know what it is. So first of all, watching the whole Mae Young Classic, I don't believe that Toni Storm could beat Mako. I will never believe that. I've watched the other match that they had that ended in a draw, and I don't believe that she could beat Mako under any circumstances at all. And I was really disappointed that she beat Mia Yim. To be fair, I get angry at anybody who beats Mia Yim. I love Mia Yim. I really wanted Mia Yim to make the final. And I was able to let that go because I was like, okay, at least, you know, like, Toni is very, very established. She's very credible. I don't know what it is. Something about watching her wrestle. I did enjoy it more in person, I have to say.
Mm.
And then I have watched stuff of her previously, because this is the first time I ever saw her in person.
Yeah.
I felt like I enjoyed it more in person than I did when I watched the broadcast back on the network to see how it looked filmed.
Yeah.
But she just doesn't do anything for me, and I don't really know why. I feel like, for me, a lot of her matches that I've seen on an emotional level feel like they start in the same gear they end in.
Right, okay.
And I think that's kind of why it doesn't work for me. But I mean, I know a lot of people who follow me on Twitter really like her, and like it's not like I have anything bad to say about her. I watch her wrestle sometimes and I just don't care. I will say I thought this match was very good for what it was. I agree that you could tell that they were editing themselves.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. It's just like, because you know, I know the beats of certain wrestlers because I've been watching them for that long. And it's like, I'm going, right, we're about three hip attacks short from this match, because Tony would do three hip attacks in this place, and this place, and here would have done this, this, and this. And I'm writing it in my head, the match it could be.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not knocking this, because it takes an awful lot of effort to go and produce exactly the kind of match you need in this particular point in the card, because this is a big card, and every match on it is a dream match. You know?
Yep.
So it makes it really hard to find your place when you're new to the company, and... You know, like I said, you've gone from being the main creative idea person, because Io was Rossi's right-hand woman, you know, in Stardom. She was essentially the leader of the locker room and booker with Rossi, the way that they work matches out. So it's like she would have had more creative control than any woman's wrestler in the world, really. You know,
except maybe for Mako.
Yeah, obviously. But, you know, she had that kind of creative control, and she's gone to this place where she doesn't really have half the creative control. So it's just difficult, and it's different. And obviously she's kind of used to that by now. So, yeah, it's just different, and it's not my cup of tea, even though they're two of my favorite wrestlers.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I didn't think about that really so much when I was watching the Mayhem Classic, and I felt like Io's performance in the Mayhem Classic was a little shaky. She missed that no-look moonsault a couple times, which I know I've seen her miss that before, and like people told me, they're like, Io misses that fairly often. I was like, well, then why did she do it? But she nailed it in this. And she got a bunch of her other stuff in that we didn't get to see during the Mayhem Classic. And I was glad. I think that was the thing I was most glad of watching this, is that I got to see Io. First of all, I got to see Io Shirai in person, which is awesome. But also, Io got some of her stuff in. Like, this is why I'm here. This is why I made it to the final.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I was not a huge fan of the fact that Tony won. And again, some of that could just be that I have that disconnect with her, and I don't really know what that is, but I felt like they had Io lose because she's Japanese, and they didn't want a Japanese girl to win 2 years in a row. And I have some frustrations with that. I realize that it does potentially set a weird precedent if you have two of the top girls from Stardom come in and win one right after the other, but also... Yeah. I felt like that could have been a nice story, too. So, I don't know. Yeah. It sounds like you and I both had a lot of feelings about this match.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It was a perfectly serviceable match. And like I said, it's hard work to get these kind of matches to work in the right way you want to. Anyway, yes. We'll move on, anyway, to the next match, which was a six-man tag team match, or six-woman tag team match. Bayley, Natalya and Sasha Banks defeated Riot Squad, Liv Morgan, Ruby Riott, and Sarah Logan in 30 minutes and 40 seconds in a very good six-person match, actually. I thought it was really cool. There was some... I mean, again, I haven't seen a lot of... Well, I've seen a lot of Natalya and I've seen a lot of Ruby Riott, but I haven't seen a ton of the other stuff. I've seen Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, obviously. But, you know, this was kind of a newer experience. And it was interesting the spots they took. I mean, Bayley taking the big bump into the ring post... It was interesting to watch Ruby Riott Squad working together so closely knit as a team, and it felt a lot like LIJ, and it felt a lot like
Bullet Club. Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, Bullet Club. It felt like Bullet Club when they're on full song. You know, when you watch those big six-mans and you watch, like, Okada, Goto, and Ishii really cooking in a six-man match, it was like that. You know, it was clear that they had a plan. It was clear that they booked this very sensibly within the storyline of both teams. It made sense. I like this a lot.
There were so many ring generals in this match. Like, oh my God. Like, Sasha, Bayley, and Natalya. That's like team girls who can book your shit for you better than you can. Ruby is in that class too, man. Oh my God, I love her and Sasha wrestling each other. And I know, every time I say that on Twitter, people are like, well, we've seen it so often recently. I'm like, yes, because it's always good. That's why they keep giving it to us. Because those two, just watching, you were talking about knowing the beats of certain wrestlers, watching the both of them for as long as I have, watching Ruby for years on the indies when she was Heidi Lovelace, and seeing her in person a whole bunch of times, and watching Sasha since she was in NXT, I can tell both of them when they're working with someone they really, really enjoy, and they move toward each other when they wrestle like they're excited to wrestle each other. And it's just so easy. It's so easy. It's nice. Like, they just, they have fun with it, and I love that. Yeah. Man, it, like, there's so much I love about this little match. Like, I love the shout-out they did right at the beginning to Natty's dad. And, you know, I thought that was real nice. Because I know, I know that Natty tries to get those little moments in there when she can, you know, as a tribute to him, which I think is wonderful. And, you know, totally, like, this is a perfect opportunity for her to do that. I loved seeing Bayley really get down in this match, because her main roster run has been so poorly handled and so, like, just, I mean, they had Alexa Bliss basically crush her right out the gate when she came up to the main roster, or pretty quickly after she came up. And it was just so needless. And it's nice to see Bayley not only in front of a crowd that actually, like, understands how good she is and appreciates her, because it's a crowd that shows up knowing they're going to watch women's wrestling, right? Like, pretty much everybody in that audience has probably seen her work in NXT and knows how good she is. But it was also nice seeing her in a match where, like, she had, I don't know, I want to say freedom to actually, like, do the stuff that she does that's really, really good. Like, like the spot she does where she runs and, like, does that baseball slide to somebody under the ropes right around the ring post. Like, I love that. I love that. I love seeing her just, like, run and jump underneath the rope to hit somebody on the outside, like a little suicide dive in there. She would not have done that on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
That was really nice. I thought Liv Morgan looked like a star in this
match. Yes, she did, definitely.
Right? And, like, Liv is one of those girls who just seems to get better and better and better at wrestling. Like, I've watched her since she was in NXT, and very early on in NXT, once I started using her on television, I thought, she's going to be somebody. Because she looked even better in her first, or her second NXT match than she did in her first one. In her first one, I was already like, wow, you're really good for someone who's only been wrestling for, like, 2 years. She's I think 22 or 23 or something like that. And she just keeps trying new things. And she and Sasha did some stuff in this match that was real creative and fun. I felt like, I said to my friend who was sitting next to me when we were watching this, I was like, Sasha's going to get the pinfall. Because every time Sasha got in the ring, the crowd volume just doubled. I love the boss. We all loved the boss. She looked so great in all her sparkly gear. And I was really glad that she got the pinfall over Liv, because I felt like that maybe, I don't know, I felt like maybe you could pretty easily set up a rematch between them of some sort if you wanted to take them out of the tag team environment. You just wanted to give those two a singles match.
Yeah.
They would do it, and it would be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm gushing. I loved so many things about this match. I have to say, I feel like Sarah Logan looked really good in this match, and I feel like Sarah is the person in the Riot Squad who has shown the least since the Riot Squad started, and that's not really her fault. I just think she hasn't been presented very well, and commentary keeps trying to do the job that the people producing and booking the matches should be doing, of saying, like, she's this kind of character, and I'm like, you can't just tell me, you have to show me.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of, it seems like a fairly one-dimensional character as well. It's not like it's a great character to start with.
It's not, and, I mean, the thing is, it's not like she's a bad wrestler. I feel like she's just not, she doesn't stand out the way that Liv and Ruby do.
No.
Right? Like, Ruby is a wrestler's wrestler. She can get down with anybody. And I feel like Liv is just really, really good. And also, Liv has a creative style, I guess, like, in terms of the way she presents herself, the fashion choices she makes. You know, she gets that characterization stuff in a way that a lot of people don't. And Sarah is good. I've seen her have perfectly good matches with lots of people, but I feel like she hasn't come into her own yet. And you're right, the character is pretty one-dimensional. And also, I'm sort of like, how did a backwoods Kentucky, like, bear wrestler or alligator wrestler, because they keep throwing in little allusions to that. I'm like, how did somebody like that end up in the riot squad?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like, I shouldn't do comparisons. That's like, Lola Bradbury was talking about online earlier. She's like, trouble is with the wrestling industry, everybody compares everybody to everybody else, and I'm trying to stop doing this, but this is a case where the only thing I can do is a comparison. If you look at the early days of the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson shouldn't stand out. He should be a really bland character.
Mm.
But because you have, like, Ollie Anderson, who's, you know, the elder statesman, the hard case. You have Tully Blanchard, who's kind of like the young up-and-coming guy, and you've got Ric Flair. So you can't be out... You're being outshined by everybody else. So how do you do that? Well, you try and create a character that is all business to contrast against the people who are flamboyant. You know, it wasn't that Arn was boring, far from it, but he created this deathly killer attitude, and that's what you're not getting from Sarah Logan. You know, you've got two people who are clearly extrovert, and you're an introvert. Well, use that to your advantage then. Be the most introvert you can be. Don't be just there. Do you see what I mean? That's where it seems to me anyway.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. I also think that with Sarah Logan in particular, they could take the opposite approach where, I mean, when she was on the indies and she was crazy Mary Dobson.
Yeah.
Like, her character was very extroverted and more punk rock, I think, which is sort of the Riot Squad aesthetic to some extent. I mean, I don't know. I don't need them all to be exactly the same. I do like the fact that it's the Riot Squad, because you've got Ring General Ruby Riot, like, at the epicenter, and everybody else just kind of falls in line behind her to some extent. But, I mean, I feel like if they maybe let her go back to a little bit of the character she had before, maybe she would feel more at home. I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know what's missing for her. I do hope she figures it out, though, because a lot of times I'll watch a match that she's in the middle of, and I'll see her do something, and I go, oh, wow, right, she's really good.
Interesting note, Riot Squad was also the name of the tag team, Dave Finlay's tag team in the early 80s with Skull Murphy in the British wrestling scene, that won the ITV World Tag Team Championships in 1982.
I did not know that. That's pretty cool.
And also the name of an internal mafia of genuine hard cases in the British wrestling industry who made sure things went the way they want to. So there you go. Anywho. It's a popular name, but well worth using. Okay, the next match was the WWE NXT Women's Championship match. Shayna Baszler defeated Kairi Sane in 12 minutes and 32 seconds in what actually I think was my favorite match of the night, to be honest. I think this was brilliant. Mm. I really enjoyed this. I love Shayna Baszler just because she's Billy Robinson's last wrestling student, and the master got it right with this particular student. And I love Kairi Sane because she's Kairi Sane and she's awesome. And I've always enjoyed her work and have done for a long time. So this was kind of my kind of thing. And it also showed the difference. You can compare this to the Mae Young Classic with two people who've been in the system for a year, two former Stardom stars who have been in the system for a year. They figured out how to make it work to their advantage. And it worked really, really well. I was a lot more comfortable with this. It was kind of an awkwardness to Tony versus Io, which wasn't in this match.
You know, it's interesting. I think I liked Tony and Io more in person than I did when I watched the broadcast. Mm. Shayna and Kairi, I really hated their first match in the Mae Young Classic final last time. Like, I had so many problems with it. Yeah. And I think a big part of it is that I didn't yet believe Shayna Baszler as a vicious killer. And they were trying so hard to push that narrative that it felt forced. And I think Shayna probably had some of the issues that a lot of MMA fighters have when they transition to pro wrestling, where they are working so hard to override their instinct of, like, hit the other person as hard as you can, choke them as hard as you can, that they almost, you know, it's like, it's not even underselling, it's like under attacking, like,
yeah.
I used to have that problem with her. I don't anymore. She has figured it out.
Yeah.
And the really nice thing about her and Kairi in this match is that you can tell, because I think this is their third one now, or maybe their fourth one now, they really trust each other. Yeah. Kairi did some stuff in that match that she would not have done if she she didn't trust Shayna Baszler with her life.
Yeah, definitely.
The spot where Shayna had her by her arm.
That's what I'm thinking of.
And the dive.
Yeah.
The dive. What a catch that was. I screamed. I think we all screamed. Like, my friend and I, like, we stood up. We were like, oh my God, is Kairi okay? Like, oh, you know, I mean, I've seen Kairi do that kind of dive with, like, I've seen her do it with Io once. I've seen her do it with Mako Satomura. She did it with Shayna, and Shayna caught her perfectly. And I was like, oh, thank God. Thank you, Shayna. I was real disappointed that Kairi lost the championship because, I mean, how do you not love a pirate princess who comes out with the title and a treasure chest? That is the most perfect thing. And also, Kairi is human sunshine, and I just love and adore her. And no matter who she's wrestling, I always want her to win. And, you know, she's that eternal sweetheart baby face to me. But I had so much fun watching her wrestle in person for the first time, and I was impressed with Shayna and how much she's grown. Like, I was really excited by a lot of the stuff she did in this match. And I was really disappointed when they said right after it that she was injured, but it doesn't sound like it's serious. Hopefully she'll only be out for a little while because it'd be nice to see her defend that championship and to see if they give her and Kairi a rematch. I mean, they'll probably will, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because
Kairi's going to have a rematch clause.
Yeah.
Unless and that'll be fun. Kairi straight I'm up to the main roster. I'm looking forward to that.
Unless they're sending Kairi up to the main roster.
Ooh. Well.
They've done worse things, I guess.
I mean, there's no one I don't want to watch Kairi wrestle. Like she can have a real good match with anybody, literally anybody. I have the same concern with her that I do with any girl who does really, really well in NXT. Is Vince gonna know what the fuck to do with her?
Yeah.
And her style is so different, you know. Like, just that was the fun part of the when she debuted sort of on the main roster in the Women's Royal Rumble was. I mean, my friend Kyle on Twitter said that she was like a human espresso shot where she just kind of woke everybody up because nothing she did looked like anything anybody else did. and sometimes that really helps when you're being introduced to a big new audience, and sometimes it doesn't because the people in charge don't know what to do with you.
Shayna Baszler was exactly the same, but the opposite. Like, she doesn't do anything anyone else does either. She doesn't run the ropes. She doesn't, like, she works submissions all the time, doesn't bother with pinfalls. She's not interested. And it's like, that's brilliant because it makes you stand out. And
it's true.
Yeah. And it's just good to watch. I bought both of them wrestle and I really enjoyed both of them. Also, as Kat said on Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind last week, she called it that there would be the debut of Marina Shafir and Jessamine Duke. And they did debut at the end of this match in a kind of, we're going to interfere anyway because you landed on our laps in the front row deal. So, which was good from a debut point of view. They did it well. There's so many things that can go wrong in situations like that. But, it worked well. So, yes. Right then. Serious business time. Becky Lynch defeats Charlotte Flair in 28 minutes and 40 seconds in a last woman standing match for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. Your thoughts, Mom?
The real main event. oh my God. I was calling her on Twitter. I was calling her Stone Cold Becky Lynch because she is the most over person on this card. She's the most over person in the company right now. She gets bigger pops than Daniel Bryan. I'll say it.
Yeah.
I saw him wrestle very recently in person at a SmackDown, and people love Becky Lynch. I love Becky Lynch. It has been so nice to see Becky go after the title, get the title, keep the title, and run with it. Because the women in WWE that I love always get the title and then lose it immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm a little shocked, frankly, that we're allowed to have this. And I realize that we're probably allowed to have it because they want Becky to be strong and powerful so that they can make Ronda look strong and powerful because that's the next program that's coming up. But I'm still shocked because Becky is not the kind of wrestler that WWE normally does super well with, right? Like, she's a babyface, she's a sweetheart, she seems like a lovely person in real life, and she's a technical wrestler.
Yeah.
And a lot of times all those things together, I mean, it's like, you know, forget about it. Gosh, her and Charlotte beating the crap out of each other in this match. We were not as loud for this one, I remember thinking, as we probably should have been, because we were just kind of exhausted. This card had no cooldowns on it. Zero chill.
Yeah.
Zero chill at all.
It is like a New Japan card. It just bangs, bang, 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 bang.
Oh my God. Yeah. I felt like I was watching the G1, in that sense, where you just kind of, you get to the end and you're like, wow, that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. I don't remember it because I'm so tired. Like, yeah. They put each other through so much. When they were just tossing chairs into the ring from either sides of it, we were screaming. Literally screaming. I was on my feet screaming. So was the little girl next to me who was dressed like Bianca Belair. Her and her mom, they were very excited about this, which was awesome. When Becky and Charlotte were on the floor and they were just mixing it up, and we had to look up at the Tron to really see what they were doing, where they were like tossing each other around, which I love. People got out of their seats and ran down to the floor to surround them and watch them. I have seen that happen once before. The last time I saw it happen, security prevented people from going out on the floor where the wrestlers were. And this time they let it happen because I don't think they were expecting it. I don't think they realized that the crowd would be so swept up in it that they would like want to try to be a part of it somehow. I love that Becky, and a lot of people have pointed this out, I did not realize this on my own, but I love that Becky beat Charlotte by putting her through a table, which is a powerbomb through a table, which is how Becky lost the title to Alexa Bliss to begin with, which was bullshit, and I'm still angry about that. We waited so long for Becky to really get what she deserves from WWE, which is, you know, to actually let her have a title reign where she really gets to do some work with it and let her have these spectacular matches that we all know she's capable of and just let people enjoy her. And that was so refreshing. My God. I couldn't believe this was 28 minutes long, because even though I felt really tired by the end of it, I knew that I was tired because we were getting to the end of the show and it had been a long day and it was my second show of the day. We went to a women's wrestling show before that, elsewhere on Long Island, before Evolution. I didn't realize it was 28 minutes because it didn't feel like 28 minutes.
Yeah.
They used everything, like every second that they had, they found a way to like mine some emotion out of you. And also, I gotta say, props to Charlotte Flair. I love Charlotte Flair when she is getting her ass kicked and she keeps coming back, because she's so powerful and she's so credible. And I mean, Vince has booked her to be really credible, but even if she hadn't had that booking where she keeps beating people that I think she should be losing to, she still all together is like the total package, right? She can kind of do everything really pretty well, especially considering how
she's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, to me, the trouble is for me with Charlotte is she's too good a heel, and she's a pawn heel, and I don't buy her as a babyface at all in any way, shape or form. She's the daughter of the greatest heel wrestler that ever lived. She's got a face in much the same way that Zack Sabre Jr. has a face that Sai just wants to punch. She has a face I just hate, because she's a badass heel. That's the way she should be. And it's like she should wrestle like her dad. And I just don't buy it. And I could completely understand why the fans have not bought it either, because Becky does deserve the things she's got. She has worked really, really hard. She's never had the opportunities. And listening to Cole present it on the, like, it's some cult of the WWE fans. No, it's the whole of the WWE fans. Are you deaf? And it's like, I have no problem with WWE trying to sell a narrative. That's their job. But when it goes against, it defies expectation. And the booking of this match was what took me out of the moment. The moment when Becky walks away in the I can't beat her, so I'm leaving moment that all heels have. She should not have done that. And that should not have been part of the booking. Because it just jarred. because everything up until then, she could be a heel, she could be a babyface. You can pick and choose what she's doing, but that's such a heel move, and it's just like, oh. Now this doesn't
make
sense.
They want Becky to be the heel, and it's like, no, fuck you guys, we love her. I said this on Twitter. Becky Lynch could have punched out literally every single person in the front row, and we all still would have cheered her.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's
she's that over.
She's just over. You know, it's the Minoru Suzuki over. He's
yes.
literally the most horrible person in the world. That's his gimmick. But he's over. That's what Becky Lynch is. She is over. She shifts merchandise. So, you know, I'm paraphrasing
Jim
Ross.
Shifts merchandise to the tune of my friend Jeff, who went to the pay-per-view with me. He got out of his seat as soon as this match was over, ran to the merch table, and came back in a Becky Lynch shirt.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, Jim Ross said on his podcast this week, no one buys shirts of people they don't like.
It's true. Except the Miz. We dislike him, but we really love him.
Yeah, and it's the only thing that brought this match down in my estimation is just like, then this wasn't their fault, and I don't want to do down the effort that they put in because I thought it was an outstanding performance. But it just jarred, and I was like, oh, I've lost the moment. I'm not there anymore.
I can understand that.
Yeah, you know, it's not...
I can understand that. It did bother me, too. I just...
When you're there, it's easier to get over it, you know.
That's true.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And if you compare this to the main event, like, Nikki Bella was popular, and you could hear she was popular, but it didn't change the narrative of the match by her actions. That makes sense. Ronda versus Nikki made more logical sense from a beginning to end kind of thing, whereas this did not make logical sense.
I sort of agree.
Yeah, I sort of
begrudgingly agree.
Yeah, the basic storyline premise did not click with me, if you see what I mean. That's kind of your fault for cheering so hard for
her. I guess we didn't do you any favors on that.
No, it's just like, I see, you know, it's because again, I'll tell you a story now, right? First job I got asked to do for Total Wrestling Magazine. I can tell this story now because Darren won't mind. Like, Darren hires me to be a women's wrestling expert. And he kind of like goes, right, what I would like you to do is I'd like you to do a profile of Becky Lynch. And I'm like, that's great, but I've only seen her wrestle like twice. I could think of 4 or 5 writers on your staff who could do a much better job than me. And he was like, but how? Don't you watch WWE? I went, no. Oh, you weren't kidding then? No. No, I wasn't kidding. This is actually true. I do not watch WWE. I've got so much. I watch more hours of wrestling a week than you will do, but I won't be watching WWE.
Yeah,
and
there's too much wrestling to watch.
Yeah, so I come into this, and it's like, I've seen Becky stuff before, and I've seen more matches now, and I've seen Charlotte stuff before. So I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing Becky Lynch bring the house down on TV from a fan point of view. Charlotte Flair being booed out the building. The commentary's wrong. The match is great, but the storytelling's telling the wrong way. So for anyone who's just coming into the show, like me, for instance, but who isn't as knowledgeable to wrestling, it doesn't make any sense. And this is why I don't get why WWE just don't ride the bandwagon. You know, it's just like, I can see. And
they
then,
do this all the time.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Why are you biting the hand that feeds you? You know, I can understand you don't want the audience telling you what to do. That's bad. Okay, that's bad for wrestling and it's bad booking. But equally, don't give them the opportunity to tell you what to do either.
Yeah.
Because you never did before. And you look at the way Bret Hart was a guy who made himself. He wasn't the intended superstar. Shawn Michaels was a guy who made himself, nor was he an intended superstar. Steve Austin was a guy who made himself. He was not an intended superstar. And The Rock was a guy who made himself and was not the intended superstar. He was, but in a completely different way than what he started. There is 5 guys I've named who are the biggest money earners of WWE in the last 30 years who made themselves. Go with it.
I don't know if you... This is a longer conversation, but we were talking about that on Twitter. I mean, we've been talking about that for like months because of the whole
Roman
all of this because of Roman, because of
Ronda
because of a lot of things. Rhonda. Also, Dean and Seth just started another program, and Dean's supposed to be the bad guy. Dean is not the bad guy. not the bad guy, even after he just betrayed his best friend, really horrifically, still not the bad guy. It's very frustrating because, and I forget who said this, I feel really bad that I forget who said this, but the audience doesn't get treated like the customer anymore. The audience is part of the product, the advertisers, the customer.
Yes.
Which means that Vince can just do whatever he wants. And not just Vince, but WWE is a company, they can do whatever they want. And they want Charlotte to be the face of their brand for the women's brand because she's blonde and statuesque and a total babe and very comfortable with the media attention in a way that not all of those women are. I get it. But she's such a good bad guy.
Oh, yeah. If you go back and put today's media into Mid-Atlantic in 1983, of course you want Flair to be champion. Of course you want Flair to be the babyface. Babyface every week because he's a good-looking guy who can handle the media. He's an extrovert. Of course you do. But you don't because he's such a good bad guy. And it's the same deal with his daughter literally 40 years later. She is such a good bad guy wrestler. That's the way she needs to be presented. I don't understand why... I understand, like, they used to turn Flair face and it would be 6 months because they needed him to be a heel most of the time, you know. And it's not the first, no, this is not a new problem. Ricky Steamboat was on this week's Jim Ross and he was saying, like, you know, back in 1990, Flair was getting cheered even though he was a bad guy, you know.
Mm.
And they had to turn him face for a while. And that was when he had that series with Terry Funk.
I feel like the only person who can out-heel her and they haven't let this happen on the main roster, but the only person who could out-heel Charlotte that I could see her having a long-running feud with is Sasha.
Oh,
and they haven't let Sasha be the vicious, mean, aggressive heel that I know she can be, that she was in NXT for a long time, because they don't want to hurt that babyface merch money.
No, they don't. And also, I'm telling you, the other person that could do it is Asuka.
Ooh, yes, but then Charlotte beat Asuka at WrestleMania.
Yeah, so it blew that anyway. Yeah, so it is just like... Anywho, shall we get to the main event before we get any more disappointment moving forward?
Well, if you're trying to avoid disappointment, maybe we shouldn't talk about this match.
Well, this was the main event, which was Ronda Rousey versus Nikki Bella, 40 minutes and 7 seconds in a perfectly serviceable match. I didn't hate it. I think Ronda was all right, but I'm not a particularly big fan of hers, and she's still kind of... She shouldn't be in main events yet.
Nope.
But I understand that they've got to... I mean, Nikki Bella was probably a good choice to put in there with because she could hide her limitations and exaggerate her good stuff, which she did to a good extent. But Ronda is only going to be as good as the people she puts in the ring with, and Nikki Bella is not a bad wrestler, contrary to popular opinion. But, you know, it's never going to be great, because it's never going to be great. And this match was probably about 12 minutes too long. If you're going to put the title on Ronda Rousey, she needs to beat everybody in 2 minutes. That's the way it has to be. It has to be Goldberg. It can't be anything else. Because it hides the limitations, and it makes her a monster.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to do.
The problem is they want her to be a doe-eyed sweetheart babyface.
She can't do that.
Can't do that.
No, she can't, and she shouldn't do that.
They're literally telling you she's the baddest woman on the planet, while she also, like, literally bats her eyelashes and complains about girls being mean to her and pulling her hair.
Yeah, this is the thing. And it's like she's wrestling Nikki Bella, whose character is essentially, you know, I'm really successful model and designer. You know, and I'm not knocking, I'm sure there are some badass models and designers out there. There probably are, but it's not the instant thing is it? You know,
they wanted Nikki to be the bad guy in this feud, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but when Ronda's opening promo for this feud right after the Bellas attack her is, Nikki, you're a slut because you had sex with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
I'm like, first of all, that's the same promo everybody writes against Nikki Bella. I'm like, just send AJ Lee her royalty check right now, first of all. And second of all, go fuck yourself. It was a bad point to make then. It's still a bad point now. And I'm sorry, I've never seen, and I have all kinds of issues with Nikki. There are lots of things her legacy means that I don't like. I think you think she's a better wrestler than I do. I'm not a big fan of a lot of her in-ring work.
No.
But I've never seen any credible evidence that shows that Nikki was able to get to the position that she's in because of John Cena's career. In fact, I would argue that Total Divas did more for John Cena and his public image and humanizing him for fans who fucking hated his guts than the other way around. And Total Divas literally wouldn't exist if the Bella Twins hadn't gone to WWE and said, we want to make a reality show about women in wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
And Total Divas is the platform that allowed half the women who work there now, who I love, who are great stars, to get to where they are. Or was a platform that helped them.
Exactly.
So Ronda acting like that in that promo, I was like, I want to punch you in the face. And the cheers that you're getting are from the toxic male fans who I fucking hate. One of whom I kind of yelled at while this match was happening.
Well, actually,
there were several people on Twitter who said that they shouted down men who were saying shitty things about Nikki.
Yeah, and you could hear it as well, because when the crowd went into dueling chants, all the male voices were shouting for Ronda and all the female voices were shouting for Nikki.
Yeah.
Because it was, you could hear it.
I was shouting for Nikki, and I've never done that in my life.
Yeah.
But I was shouting for Nikki. I was shouting for Nikki like I was 2015 Brie. Come on, Nikki! like I was not... This was so frustrating, and I will say, watching it back on camera, watching the way it was broadcast, it looked much better and much more interesting and much more complex than it did in person at a great distance.
But again,
in person, is it okay? Am I allowed to talk about the things I don't like about Nikki Bella's wrestling? Is that going to pull
the
whole show
down?
No,
that's not going to cause me any problems.
Okay.
I didn't say she was great. I'm
not
even a fan of hers. I don't think she's as bad as people think she is. Or else she would have made a living.
I don't think she's as bad as people think she is either. I still think she's very frustrating to watch, because in person, the criticism I have is always that the spots she does or sequences she does are not connected. There's too much space between them that feels dead.
Yeah.
Where nothing's happening at all. And they're supposed to be emotional moments, but they don't feel that way to the crowd. Because there's not enough body language. There's not enough other stuff happening. There aren't enough cues to tell you, unless the person she's with is really good at selling, there's nothing else there to tell you what you're supposed to be feeling if you can't see her facial expressions.
No, I would completely agree with that, yes.
It's hard. It's frustrating. And in this case, I mean, they had the problem that a lot of people who are sort of newer to wrestling have, where like Ronda didn't really know how to use the ring around her in a lot of points in the match, where, I mean, Nikki was more aware of that stuff, but again, Nikki's specialty is not connecting things to each other so that it all kind of flows together and tells one big long continuous story. And I realized, I think I said this on Twitter, that in fact I know I did, that when your focus is what looks good on camera, you don't need to do that so much, because the camera follows you wherever you go.
Yeah, exactly.
But in person, the fact that this was the main event, the fact that we were exhausted after Becky and Charlotte and the war, the literal war they had just put themselves and us through.
Yeah.
The fact that this was at the end of a card where we were excited about absolutely everything, including the match that was probably supposed to be a blow-off cooldown battle royale, where everybody was still like screaming for that whole thing.
Yeah.
There was just no way,
of course it wasn't,
that the crowd was going to like it unless you're a diehard fan of either of those two women. And most of the people who are diehard fans of Ronda are the wrestling fans that I'm like, cool, don't talk to me. Please don't sit anywhere near me at a show, because you're going to be booing people that I like, and you're going to be doing it as obnoxiously as possible, like saying that Nikki Bella is a fake plastic bitch, like some asshole did behind me.
Yeah.
This was so frustrating to watch. And watching it on camera, it was a little less so, partly because I knew what to expect. But I'm really tired of Ronda getting all of this credit for work she hasn't done.
Yeah.
And work she still needs to do. And, you know, and then they're giving her a match with Becky Lynch, so they're probably going to have her go over, which is terrible, or it's going to end in a draw. I hope it ends in a draw, honestly, but I can't see Becky winning it.
Yeah.
And then Ronda even gave an interview the other day where she's talking about she wants a match with Sasha. I'm like, who doesn't want a match with Sasha Banks?
Of course she does. You'd be stupid not to.
She'd be stupid not to, and she even said, she's like, And I don't think I'm at her level yet. I'm like, bitch, you're never going to be at her level. I'm sorry. I shouldn't talk that way. But I know that Ronda Rousey, as much as I can't stand her as a person at all, I know that she has the toolkit to eventually get to a point where she can do like what Shayna Baszler did, where Shayna walks out there and I don't see her MMA career. I just see the character and the story that she's telling. I know that Ronda has those innate skills, but she's not being put in a position to develop them properly. She should be in the performance center. And I know they're not going to do that, paying her what they're paying her, but she should be in the performance center training. She should be getting used to doing this. She should be learning. And right now, I mean, she is learning, but she's being set up to fail. And that's the thing that WWE likes to do for their female stars, and or not even likes to do. They can't help themselves.
No, I mean,
they set women up to fail all the time, and it's so frustrating.
Here's the thing. This is what they should do. Like I said earlier, it should be Goldberg, because Goldberg worked. And do you know what he did? Goldberg did 2-minute squash matches, 150 odd of them in the row. They're just squash matches. And when he wasn't on TV doing squash matches, he was in the power plant in Atlanta with Dave Finley getting himself sorted out so he could do longer matches. So when he got to the main event, he could go 20 minutes and it didn't look stupid.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't a great wrestler. He's not my favorite wrestler, but he had the look, he had the size, he had the mic skills, and they gave him Dave Finley to look after him. And the amount of guys I know that Dave Finley has looked after and made them into stars.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby Lashley. You know, he had a fair hand in John Cena. He had a fair hand in Trish Stratus. He had a fair hand in Lita. On the British circuit, he had a really big hand in Steven Regal. Had a really big hand in a lot of Kid McCoy, on a lot of guys. Robbie Brookside. You know, he's been doing this for literally 35 years. He's been making people into stars. And it's like, it's that simple. You stick Ronda Rousey in the performance center every day of the week except Monday. And she goes to a TV taping and she squashes somebody in 2 minutes. And that's all she does. And she don't have to do it every week. She only have to do it once a fortnight.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. And they could have kept her away from the title for a year. And then she has the big run to WrestleMania. And even in today's short attention span, there's stuff you could have done with her that would have made much more sense. And you'd have made a lot more people in the process rather than running her straight at the title in the first place. But that's just me, because I've seen this before.
I agree. I agree completely. Yeah. And I don't even think, even if you're not going to put her in the performance center, I don't think they want to pay Ronda to do house shows the same way that they do with all the other girls, but that's where she's going to learn. That's how all those women get better while they're actively on the road. Not just women. That's how everybody gets better.
The reason why those disconnects you see with Nikki Bella are there is because she didn't have a long indie career where you learn to do that body language stuff to an audience of 50 people, and you have to understand that every one of those 50 people sees what you're trying to do, because you're trying to entertain 50. Once you can entertain 50, you can entertain 500, and so on. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also the reason why Shayna Baszler, after 2 years on the indies and a year in the performance center, is a smooth operator and a really good performer. Plus, she had Billy Robinson hitting her with a stick till she got it right.
And Mercedes Martinez. We have to give Mercedes credit, too, because Mercedes was instrumental.
And Josh Barnett as well, who gave her loads of business advice on the business side of wrestling, too. Josh Barnett, who was wrestling in Wigan last night.
Really?
Yeah. You know that? Obviously, none of you who are listening are party to this. In our production chat, I actually put the Facebook feed for the Snake Pit Match Wrestling Championships.
Oh, you know, I saw that, but I didn't check it out. Yeah. I didn't realize Josh Barnett was associated with it.
Yes, Josh Barnett was in wrestling in the heavyweight division, and I believe he won his match.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yes, he was cool. Actual shoot wrestling, actual proper wrestling with proper wrestlers wrestling. You could probably find it on the Snake Pit's feed. If you don't know what the Snake Pit is, if you go and listen to a lot of the early episodes of the Beginner's Guide to Japan, we kind of delve into the Snake Pit and what the Snake Pit is. And we'll probably one day do a Snake Pit episode, because the Snake Pit's really important. Jack Gallagher from 205 Live, he was trained in the Snake Pit.
I like him a lot. He's great.
Yeah, and the Snake Pit was home to one Billy Robinson, who trained Shayna Baszler, as we said. Right, well, that kind of wraps up the whole show. So, what's your final words on WWE Evolution, Chelsea?
It was a great show. I think it was probably the best WWE event I've ever been to in person, really, overall. Like, it was so much fun. I think, to me, it proves the women are the main event. The women are the main event. They have been the main event. They should be allowed to do all the things that the men are allowed to do. Also, they need tag team titles. It was a great show. I'm so grateful that I got to go see it in person. And I hope that the fact that it did so well will give WWE incentive to do more events like it in the future, because the women deserve it.
Definitely. We must say congratulations to WWE for doing a fantastic card that we really thoroughly enjoyed. Now,
yes.
Obviously, we have been a bit negative towards it in spaces, but when you love something, you see all the negative points 10 times more clearly. But yes, it was a good show overall, and I did enjoy my WWE experience. Won't make me watch any more till this entire women's card done again, mind. But, you know, it was nice to have a holiday from the usual stuff I watch. Okay, thank you for your time today, Mom. You can find Chelsea at Shoulders Up, where there is some wonderful writing. You can find her at Shoulders_Up on Twitter. Thank you for today.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find me at Sheriff Lonestein. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show, and at Patreon, The Troopany Show, where you can keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Mike Freeland's Wrestling, we work the hair. Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind will be around later in the week, where Dara and Kat will join him. Dara making his Troopany channel debut. Dara is a really cool wrestling writer. He used to write a lot for Total Wrestling. I hope you like him. Fine, the Irishman. And Kat, you've heard before, because she's a star. You can listen to them probably on Wednesday, I think, when we get the show up. Hope you're enjoying that show. Thank you very much for listening to us. Next week, we're at Power Struggle with Chris Jericho defending the IC title against Evil and Tomohiro Ishii and Minoru Suzuki for the RevPro British Championship. Should be a nice, pleasant affair with lots of wrist locks. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye!